Hello and welcome to this podcast from the
Podnuts
World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the
Podnuts
World Service are supported by
Podnutsians and
advertising.
Hey, Podnutsians, really quick disclaimer. Take note, other podcast. This is a disclaimer for the listener. The audio quality on this episode was weird. I cannot explain what happened except for the pitch and the tone went down a great deal. So I tried to fix it in post. Not sure how it's going to come across. Good luck. And thanks everyone for downloading. Hey, Podnutsians, welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 213. This is Door to Door Geek here from podnuts.com. I would normally apologize for the lengthy absence, but I'm not going to apologize. It's way past being a way past that. It's been nearly a year. It's been almost 10 months, I believe. I want to first off say, everyone who has sent us email, thank you. Everyone who hasn't, I'm wondering why not, but you know, that's between you and your email client. We'll say if you want to get in contact with us, you can send us a email at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 707-6-PODNUT. This is not being streamed live today. This is actually around noon my time, off for the day. Had to do some tax stuff, had to do some kid stuff, had to do some dentist stuff, had to do some to-do list kind of stuff. Best and most promising way you can have this show come out more frequently is by direct encouragement. All you got to do is send us an email, send us a voicemail, send us a tweet, send us any message on any platform that you know we're at, and it will definitely encourage us to talk about Linux. So the first thing I want to do is really just give a quick rundown of everything to me that has happened in the world of Linux in the last 10 months that I find important. Are you guys ready for it? Okay. Yep, sorry, that was it. There is nothing happening in the consumer space that I find incredibly exciting, encouraging, cool, or anything. I'm seeing a lot of stuff on the business side. I'm seeing a lot of stuff on the enterprise side that I really legitimately do not care about. Like Patrick Norton hosts the show. I believe he still hosts the show over on the Twit Network, This Week in Computer Hardware. Him and the guy from Kentucky used to host it. I love both of them. I think they're really awesome guys. But it's also the most boring, mundane topic that I really don't care about. I don't care about hardware specs. I don't care about the latest NVIDIA chipset. I really don't care about the minute differences between these chipsets and these generations and these new motherboards and the difference between USB 3, USB 3.1, and USB 3.2. I almost don't care about them, nor do I want to go into detail about how Linux is or is not supporting them, because that's the only news that I'm seeing now. There is game news, but it doesn't matter, because this is not a game podcast. I will state again, any podcast in the universe that is Linux focused and tries to talk about games, you all sound like idiots, except for Linux Gamecast. And it's because I know, for without a shadow of a doubt, those guys live and breathe gaming. They understand gaming first and foremost, and they happen to be Linux enthusiasts. And they happen to actually have open channels of communications with many other game players, but also developers and, you know, people offering solutions. So if you want to know Linux game news, you have to check out Linux Game Cast. And if you get your news from any place else, you have to understand it's coming from an incredibly, incredibly undereducated view from what I can tell. And I say this because I now listen to over 155 podcasts, some good, some bad. And 99.9% of the Linux podcasts out there are bad, in my opinion. But since I haven't done anything for 10 months, I'm going to hold off on my direct critiques right now. But I will say again, if you want to know gaming stuff on Linux and about Proton and how that's changing the game, check out Linux Gamecast. If you want to know Linux stuff, it almost is non-existent. There isn't a lot of things that I can tell, that I can see that's going on that's really cool, is what I'll say. And if you say I'm wrong, just send me an email, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. There are a couple little things that I will state again, just because that's how I am. That's how Door to Door Geek is. If you want to support those who support you, check out thinkpenguin.com. I have coupons for them. If you go there and you see their prices and you balk at their prices, remember, I have a coupon for you. It can help. Remember, they're not going to make stuff free, or else I would have used all the coupons. So I have coupons if you want to check them out. I think they're really cool people. I think they're awesome people, and I think they're really smart, and they're doing a very good service for the computing community in general. I'm also going to give a real quick shout out to Jonathan Nadeau, Admiral Jonathan Nadeau. I will say once again, he's like my spiritual brother. I don't really have a lot of spiritual brothers, is what I'll say, but he is definitely family. And he's going through his own things, just like me. I'm going through my own things right now, and I miss him. I've been able to talk to him for a couple of years. Accessible Computing Foundation is kind of no more. He has way too many things in life keeping him way too busy. Sonar is still available to be downloaded. They have had an update last September. September 15th, 2017 was the last time they had an update, and it's an Antergos version of Sonar GNU Linux. It is at sourceforge.net. There will be a link in the notes. So if you have someone who needs accessible computing, I would encourage you to at least check out that, mainly to see what your choices are. It might support your needs, it might not, but it's definitely worth your time to look up. I have not gone to a Linux conference now in, I want to say, over a year. And what I'll say is part of it is financial. You guys know, you guys who still subscribe to this feed, at least, have been around long enough to know. We used to have an Amazon affiliate thing, bringing in some months hundreds and hundreds of dollars. That's gone. I asked people to contribute like $1 a month. We had a very low turnout for that, but I will say thank you to everyone who has, because you've enabled the lights to stay on here. And that's really a cop-out excuse why I'm not going to conferences. To me, the real reason I'm not going to conferences is it is a very awkward social situation that I need to approach slower, is the way I'll put it. A lot of people who saw me at conferences, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I would periodically disappear. Or go to the bathroom for more than a couple minutes and then come back out. I'm vexed when I'm in that kind of social situation surrounded by that many people. And it's a very taxing time, is what I'm going to say. Some people say, well, then you're an introvert and you need to be by yourself to gain energy. And then when you're around people, you lose energy. No, it has nothing to do with that. In fact, I believe I was born an extreme extrovert. But my speech impediment made me, I'm sorry, my speech disfluency made me like forcibly not want to, not enjoy, not like communicating with other people. And I really convinced myself that it was not a good thing to do. It was a harmful thing to do. So when I go to conferences and I'm sitting around, you know, sometimes hundreds and hundreds of people where random people I don't even know come up to me and start talking, I almost start to cry right there. Because I just don't, this is not normal to me. For 30 years of my life, I spoke to no one. No one spoke to me. And I thought to myself, que sera, sera, that's how life's going to end. Then I got married. I got kids. I started podcasting all just over 10 years ago, which is less than a quarter of my life. And I can say that it's not incredibly easy to get used to the different atmosphere at these conferences. And I'm not going to lie. Shaking people's hands like Chuck Green, shaking people's hands like John Miller, shaking people's hands like Jonathan Nadeau, like Cody Cooper, like Martin Obando. God, I love that guy. When I shake some of those guys' hands, he's just talking about them, and I feel like I'm becoming verklempt. I don't know what word to use without saying crying. Meeting those guys and shaking their hand was such an unbelievably positive and satisfying experience, is the only way I can put it. Josh in Idaho, because Idaho, not you, Idaho. Josh in Idaho, and then Josh in Canada. Eric Salt, he's one of the guys I never got a chance to shake his hand yet so far, and it really, you know, I really want to, because he is one of the guys I consider to be some, like, a great human being. And there's many, many, many other people I got to meet. Some of them, you know, really good times, meeting guys like other podcasters I thought was really cool, but I'm not there to try to make network connections with other podcasts. Not at all. In fact, I was there just to try to maintain, and my logic always is, change is good. Change is inevitable. Fight change and you die. So I thought, once in a while, let me take a break from my home life and let me go there. And I will say, every time when I went to a conference, most of the way home, I ended up crying because I couldn't wait to get home. I couldn't wait to hug the kids. Couldn't wait to hug the wife. Couldn't wait to, dare I say, get back to work. When I get to work, I'm at least in some semblance of control, even though I'm not. But I am, because at least I know what to expect there. Where at conferences, I never know what to expect. So conferences are a little bit difficult for me to handle, is what I'll say. And it was at no fault of anybody I met. You know, hanging with Stormwatch, driving, oh man, I can't remember his name, driving from Maryland, where I went down south by Annapolis, picked him up. We drove to OLF. Oh man, names are so bad to me. I knew I was going to forget names, but everybody I got to hang with at some point in time at conferences, trust me when I tell you, it was a good time. It was a good thing. It just was a bit much. So I'm going to, again, try to go to a conference here soon. I don't know which ones. I don't know when. I will say this. I am never heading south in the summertime. So never ask me to go to SELF, because to have a conference in the middle of what I call the heat belt, in the middle of the heat season, is not only stupid, it's irresponsible as a conference owner to do, because you are begging people who are not used to those types of conditions to have health problems. Congratulations on being incredibly stupid and self-centered and myopically minded, is the way I'll put it. And I know Jeremy's a nice guy. I know he is. He doesn't get it. He lives there. He knows the climate. He's used to it. Nobody else is, people. Nobody else is. So I'll head to other areas much quicker than I ever head south in the summertime. To be honest, the conference I'm going to try to go to is Lenox Fest Northwest. I don't want to say the best people I ever met in my life are up there, but man, they were really close to it, is what I will say. I need to find a way to just go and shake hands with Bruce and Jonathan in the Northeast. And I will say there are more than a couple people, Honky Magoo, up there too, talking about trying to revitalize Northeast Lenox Fest. And here's what I'm going to say publicly to him. Do it. Number one, do it. Number two, learn the definition of the word delegate, or else it will kill you. Okay, you have to delegate stuff out. And what I really mean by that is take the idea, the online lug, and do what other conferences do. The best thing you can do for a successful conference is to learn what successful conferences do. And like OLF, they have a weekly IRC chat session. And if need be in that chat session, they then do a like video conferencing weekly session to talk about things that need to get done. So it just starts as an IRC chat window where things are typed. And then if it becomes important enough, then they start to do like a voice chat, is what I was led to believe. And it's a good idea. But the main reason they do that IRC is A, just to see if people are still alive, because people are remote. You don't need to live close to the conference to be a key integral part to having a conference work successfully. Yeah, you know, 99% of the work is done, you know, over the internet, over a phone line kind of thing. So reach out. First things first. First, you have to pull people who say they're interested. Secondly, you have to give them a hurdle to overcome. The hurdle of overcoming will then tell you who's actually interested and who just said they're interested. Then you hold weekly meetings and then you start to draw everything out from there. Number one, most important thing is money. With a conference, where's the money coming from? Because no place is going to give you everything for free. You're going to have to pay for some stuff. And for the really good speakers, you're going to have to pay for their airfare, or partially pay for their airfare, or at least partially pay for their hotel, or at least partially pay for them to get from the airport to the hotel. You got to pay something. And then, like in the very beginning or end of the conference, if you can have any kind of little party where you can have drinks, even sodas and chips, guess what? That costs money. And if that comes out of your pocket, you're planning to fail. So you have to have these kinds of things first set up. And I encourage you, Honky Magoo and everybody else, first things first, set up a website. Second thing, pull people together. Pull as many people you together. Coordinate with online meetings to where you can have sessions, to where you can talk out things. I will say, communicate with as many people as you can right now who've already been involved with conferences. Stand on the shoulders of the giants before you. Don't try to reinvent the wheel, or else you will not be successful. And I'm going to say another thing that I've said in the past a lot. I'm pretty sure I've said it a lot. I feel like I've said it a lot. And that is freedomboxfoundation.org. What is Freedom Box? What is Freedom Box, you say? Okay, from the About page on freedomboxfoundation.org, Freedom Box is a software system that powers a ultra-secure personal server built to act as a protective shield between you and the public internet. To that end, it couples a free software system with always-on, inexpensive, and power-efficient hardware about the size of a pocket dictionary. The hardware is a single board computer that costs around $60 US and offers the computing power of a smartphone. The software is a free open source system available to download at no cost, preloaded, and with many useful apps and tools designed to protect your freedom, privacy, and user rights. Okay, we've had a bit of a splash in social ecosystems, and this is probably the most appropriate show to say this on too. It seemed like a large percentage of Linux weenies, is the best way I can put it, were on Google Plus, which is why Google Plus was a really cool place. And now the FUD going around is it's dying, they're killing it. Blah, 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 blah. No, read the friggin' articles. Stop reading the headlines, please, people. It's not dying. It's being converted to a Google App Suite product only. So it's going behind a wall, a paywall, you know, like Apple paywall. It's going behind a paywall. It's not dying. Stop saying it's dying. And it's not dying for another 10 plus months. Next August 2019. Okay. So now with that out of the way, I would love it if systems like this, Freedom Box at freedomboxfoundation.org, would take this opportunity of nerds and geeks and Linux people and deviant artists kind of thing alike, if all those people would have a place where you could get like a little, oh, I don't know, a Raspberry Pi, maybe a Raspberry Pi, and you literally take this image, download it, and you flash it to that. It automatically would try to do the UPnP and open up the holes in your router because, you know, it kind of has to, and then have this as a federated system of devices that we can have as our own controllable social network, is what I'll say. But the real thing is, I don't want to be on a social network. Everybody on a social network can die in a handbasket. That's how I feel about social networks. They bring out the worst in people way too often. So I really don't want to be a part of them. I don't want to be the guy either that uses them as a broadcast medium. I don't want to stand on a soapbox, spew out basically garbage on social networks, and then walk away. I really don't, because it feels bad. It feels dirty. It doesn't feel good. But, you know, that's kind of what it is, kind of. But I would really appreciate if something else would come up and take over the need for Google Plus with something else, to where, you know, we can actually enjoy it and use it, kind of thing. And I would love it if we could actually control it, because the new word ending call sign for this show, at least when I'm on it, is not going to be Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. But it is, if you do not have root, you do not know who does. So being on any social network, not having root, means everything you do is completely out of your control. That's all there is to it. Okay, now really quick on the hardware list for the Freedom Box, which you can go to a different different website there, which is just freedombox.org, where it's much more fancier, prettier, goes over all the features and stuff in a much more pretty kind of way. But here's all the hardware that it supports. Freedombox, which is based on Cubitruck, C-U-B-I-E-T-R-U-C-K, which is a type of board, because there's the Cubi board 2, BeagleBone Black, O-Lenix Xeno, Lime 2, I've never heard of that, A20 O-Lenix Xeno Micro, again, never heard of that, PC Engines APU, which if PC Engines is what I remember, PC Engines is actually the Chinese distributor that we talked about. Yeah, it is PCEngines.ch. We talked about them years ago. These are people that make very good hardware for your PF Sense router firewall kind of box. So that kind of box can support FreedomBox. They also have a PC Duo 3, which I've never seen before. And of course, VirtualBox. So you can set up in a VM and just forward the ports, blah, blah, blah. Also working hardware. This hardware works, but is not recommended due to freedom, performance per cost, or other concerns. Okay, this is how projects, I will say, fail. And I laugh at other people. I literally laugh, not in their face, because I would be too socially awkward, but I laugh at other people that try to correct me when I say the Raspberry Pi is not open. I'm nobody, first off. To complain what I say is actually quite comical, but it's not open. And here's proof that here's at least a third-party independent organization, independent as independent can get, organization called Debian, wiki.debian.org/freedombox/hardware is where they list all this stuff. And they do not suggest you use a Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 2, or Raspberry Pi 3 because it is not free. The code is not free. Stuff is hidden behind binary blobs. I will say, I wish for adoption they wouldn't say it on this page. In fact, maybe during the installation, just have a blurb with an OK button to let people know that you're running on not completely free hardware, which explains why the other hardware I have not heard of, at least for the most part, because with all, except for the BeagleBone Black, which is extremely overpriced for its price per processing unit, I'll say. The Cubi board I've heard of, but the other ones I haven't, probably because they're not very powerful, is what I'm going to guess. And I'm a power-hungry slob. But they say Dream Plug, Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 2, Raspberry Pi 3 are three types of, or four types of devices where you can install it, but they do not suggest it because of freedom, performance per cost, or other concerns, which we all know, at least the Raspberry Pi, it's a freedom thing. It's not a cost thing, and it's probably not a performance thing. And then the Dream Plug, I'm going to guess, is a cost thing only because it looks good. It looks like nice hardware. So I'm going to encourage people, you know, take a look at other things. Don't just jump on Diaspora. Don't just jump on Twitter. Don't just jump on Mastodon. Don't just jump on Facebook. Don't just jump on any of those things, okay? First and foremost, Mastodon is not Mastodon. Kiss my white, pale, Irish, whatever you want to call it. It's not. It is GNU Social with a prettier front end. Mastodon is source code that has failed at least 5 times before. Okay, the layman's definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and expecting something different. Mastodon is going to fail just like its predecessor. I said it slow for the Mastodon users out there. It's going to fail. It's just a question of when and how hard. It might last for a couple of years, but I supremely doubt it. It's going to fail again. And I'm not going to go on a system that has limited number of characters, number one. Number two, where it's too easy for social things to take over and run and ruin and rule the roost. I want to have something I have root on, including, you know, what's going on. And with Mastodon, I don't like its backbone. I don't like how it's built. I don't like how it's federated. I don't like how it's connected. I don't like how it's managed. I don't like how it's owned. I don't like how it's operated. I don't like how it's interfaced. I think it looks good, but I cannot do it, is what I'll say. So I'm hoping FreedomBox or something else will come up and take up that mantle, that place. But here's what I really honestly expect and suspect. I suspect this is all just a ruse Literally. Because the security breach, if again, you don't just read the article, but you actually go and read the actual body of it, there was no security breach. There was no security breach. There was no security breach, people. There was a potential API leakage that they cannot find anybody ever took advantage of. And then they said, we're going to close down Google Plus, is what you people would say. But so there was no breach. There was a potential for breach, which is not good, but there was a potential for breach. And then they said they're going to turn it internal. What I really hope is right before it happens, and when all you people go to MeWe, you go to Mastodon, you go to Facebook, you go to Twitter, you go to Diaspora, you go to all these things and you start feeling comfy and you think you're in some great place and you love it. What I really hope is right before the end of August 2019, they announce it's going to be something different but the same. And I hope it's still geek friendly. That's what I really hope is going to happen. Because to wait till next August, why? To me, there has to be some logical reason behind that. They're not making money off of it. I don't know why they would wait, but my guess is that's why. They are hoping between now and then somebody can think of something very nice to put in its place. I don't know. Again, just extremely guessing. But I encourage people again, Freedom Box, check it out. Freedom Box Foundation, or you can go to freedombox.org. You can download the VM if you want to play with it, launch it in a VM. And at least check it out. It's a public interface. Think of it almost like your own social node. There are things that you can do outside the network. There are things you can do inside the network. I really want this project to finally take off. And if you actually look in my show notes, I probably talked about this project back in 2015. So it's not a new project. It's been around a really, really long time. And I want it to finally get some traction. Next link in the notes I'm going to talk about is an article from ZDNet. Says, Linux now dominates Azure. Cricket sound, cricket sound, cricket sound. Welcome to 2017. I stated that well over 2 years ago because it was true 2 years ago because I actually had a guy who was literally up in Washington working for Microsoft, working in Azure when it was taking off. And from the very beginning, the traffic was Linux. It took a little bit of time, he said, for the install base to hover around 50% for Linux, because there's different ways you can measure it. You can measure it in file size. You can measure it in number of instances. You can measure it in activity on instances. Just like when you pay for a VPS, there's different things you can pay for. Well, with Azure, there's different ways of measuring how things are on it. And I can tell you this, literally 2 months after Azure launched, 80% of the traffic was Linux, which means while there might be more Windows instances on it, they weren't getting used. Okay, that's just the truth. Microsoft went back, donated code to the Linux kernel to make it more Azure compatible, and it seems to be paying off for them. Do I want to support Microsoft now? Hell no. Do I want them to do good? Hell no. Do I want a Windows 10 computer? Hell no. Do I want an Xbox of any kind? No, I don't. But I, as an American, I want American companies to be successful for what they are. I don't want them to become monopolistic. I don't want them to be harmful to any other segment of the technical population, the business population, or the real population. And I think that Microsoft is trying to be nicer with some of the things recently, including releasing a bunch of licenses, which I'm not going to talk about, but they're trying to be nice. And this is classic multi-billion dollar corporation stuff. You always got to remember, everything they always do has nothing to do with you, an end user, a consumer, a patron, a citizen of the planet Earth, has nothing to do with you. Every decision they ever make has to only do one thing, and that is to benefit the shareholders. And as long as they benefit the shareholders, they're going to be alive another day as a company. Linux dominating Azure. Okay, I don't see how that's a story, but it's ZDNet and it's Stevie J. Von Nichols. So I don't want to talk bad about him because there's few people out there putting their time into typing out things that I respect. And he's one of the guys I think really tries to do the best job ever kind of thing. I will say there is a link here I'm going to put in. I will not put down i3. I've been using i3 more and more recently. What I don't understand is why my i3 window manager, not desktop, i3 window manager does not work correctly with OBS, which sucks because I really like OBS for broadcasting, recording, and streaming content. But it doesn't work with that. I will say anybody who wants to dabble with the idea of i3, you basically have to have a cheat sheet available to you in some manner. There's a billion of them. There's all kinds of them. They're everywhere. You can just image search in Google i3 cheat sheet and find 20 of them. I definitely encourage you find them, stick with it, learn about it, and you'll be much happier in your day-to-day usage of i3. And I will say the best thing about i3 is you don't need to take your hands off the keyboard and touch a mouse for 99.9999% of the things, which to me makes things recordable in applications like AutoKey, which I will add AutoKey to the notes as well. AutoKey is a great application reminiscent of AutoHotKey on Windows, which I will say I've used for years, and it works good. As good as can be expected is what I'll say. Okay, I'm going to put also a link into this notes. I said I use i3. And you know, i3 is one of the most, I will say, believable interfaces that you could have seen 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe even 40 years ago on TV or movies. It's not a quote-unquote modern-looking interface. It is a extremely efficient interface. It is a very keyboard-driven interface, and There's no compositing on that desktop. There's compositing desktops, and then there's not compositing desktops. Compositing desktops require, for the most part, 3D acceleration of some sort. Even with Intel graphics card, it supports basic compositing. So what one of my firm beliefs is third-party video cards, aka, you know, NVIDIA or AMD, will make any Linux system unstable over time. Maybe not initially, but over time it will, because drivers will fall out of favor, fall out of support, and then you have to do what I call a Franklin fix. Franklin's on the $100 bill, aka you got to spend money in order to fix your problem. I like not having that problem come to me, so I like non-compositing desktops. But this, once in a while I have to explore, I have to look at other things, and this is nxos.org. And this is a Nitrix powered by Linux KDE Plasma 5 Qt and Nomad desktop. That there is a lot of words, Clark. And what I'll say is this is a completely different looking desktop than what most desktops at least look like. They have a little bar at the bottom, which is very Mac like. It definitely seems more colorful, what I'll say, than the normal Mac type setup. Honestly, I like how the folders look. I like how some of the windows look, and it's just different. So once in a while, I just try to find something completely different. And this to me looks like possibly like another one of those French distributions. If longtime listeners to the show remember, I seemingly repetitively fall in love with French distributions of Linux because they seem to put a little bit more attention in the interface. They put a little bit more style in the interface, like purposefully, where other desktops just, let's just make our stuff blue, or let's go for orange this time around. How about curves? Let's go for some curves, where the French distributions at least try to do something visually stunning, is what I'm going to say. There are parts of this desktop that I'm liking. There are parts of the desktop I'm finding annoying, but it's just something different. And it's KDE Plasma, which I will say I never played with KDE Plasma before. It seems fine, I guess. There's nothing I can tell that it does that I think I can't do already with i3 and Kupfer. It isn't like this is filling a need that I, a void I have, but it is fun to play around with, is what I'll say. I honestly like the colors. It just makes things a little bit easier for a older person to see, is what I'm going to say. So if you want to check out something different, nxos.org, check it out. It's Plasma, KDE, Linux. I think it's pretty cool. Okay, now the last thing I wanted to talk about was I was listening to Going Linux, Larry Bushy and Bill, number one, two of the nicest guys I think I've ever listened to in a podcast form. And they had an email where someone was having an issue with their boot partition becoming full. Okay, number one, I despise distributions that when you go through the auto installation wizard, it just makes different partitions. In 2018, to me, to make those separate partitions for boot, for home, for things like that, is completely incompetent of them. There's no reason to do it. Storage is cheap. RAM is cheap. Okay. The example I use is I have a 7-year-old Lenovo ThinkPad T420, I believe it is, with a terabyte hard drive in and 16 gigs of RAM. Okay. There's no reason to make separate boot partitions for end users. Now in enterprise environments, I encourage people to have, honestly, separate partitions for VAR. In fact, I typically put VAR into RAM just because, but you can put partitions in their place and then you have to manage them. Every time something like that happens on a computer, you have to acknowledge a different level of being an administrator. And these users going through these wizards do not know what it means to be an administrator. So for the distributions that do it, I'm wagging my finger. Shame on you. Shame on you. Do not do that. Okay. Number two, if you do it, expect problems, because it's like installing Outlook a couple years ago. When you installed Microsoft Outlook on any computer, the time bomb started to tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. You never knew when it was going to explode, when that archive was going to get too big, but it was going to happen. We all knew it was. We just didn't know when it was going to happen. When you make a separate partition called boot, it is a ticking time bomb. You're going to have problems with it. Just stick everything on one partition. And I'm going to say this. I don't suspend any device ever, period. I don't hibernate. I don't suspend any device. I literally only have one partition on any drive now, and it's everything. There is no swap. I do not use swap. You only really need swap if you have low RAM or you hibernate or suspend for end user computing. In enterprise, completely different. But for end users, I literally just have one thing, okay? But I will say this, I despise the GUI interfaces for Linux package management, because the only guarantee with any of those GUI interfaces is they are removing functionality. They are hiding abilities that end users do not know about. And their logic is we have to make it easier for people to use. I'm not going to say they're wrong. I will say you have to make that point aware to the end users, and you're not. You need to make sure that end users realize when they open up your software store that they're getting a limited interface in their package management ecosystem, okay? And that's where you, as a developer, you can actually then have just a thing up in the corner, up on the side, drop down from a menu, where you can link them to either a embedded video or into a web page where you explain that this interface you're using is limited, and here's why, and here's how you can access the other features. Instead of just hiding stuff from end users, be the gateway to greater knowledge. Mini rant over. Okay, I never use a graphical interface except for Synaptic, and I use Synaptic because I don't know any features that it removes. Because if you look at it, it's a really busy interface with lots of stuff going on, unlike all these software stores that are made for 4-year-old kids. Okay, yes, I said that. So here's a command I always run. This command is going to be in the notes. Now, on different terminals, it's going to have to be slightly different, number one. Number two, this is a Deb-based system, Ubuntu, Mint, Debian kind of command. And the command is sudo apt update space %, sudo apt upgrade space %, sudo apt upgrade %, sudo apt dist dash upgrade space %, sudo apt auto clean space %, and sudo apt auto remove. That is a lot of stuff, which is why I love Control R in searching my history of the command line. I ignore every visual prompt for upgrading. In fact, I disable them on all my systems because they're garbage. Okay. This was my primary reason I hated Mint back in the day, because Mint decided, like the leader of Italy back in the day, that they would determine, they knew better what patches you need and what packages you need. No, that's not how Linux is supposed to work. Okay. That's Windows. That's Apple. And for everyone who likes Mint, you really should just switch to Apple products. You'll be in heaven. What this command does, it's not a command. It's actually multiple commands. It's actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 commands, if my fingers are right, I think. It does an update of all your repo information. It does an upgrade of all your installed packages. It then does distribution upgrades, or it does major version upgrades with the dist upgrade. Then it does the auto clean and the auto remove. Those two I always get backwards. One of them goes and uninstalls all orphaned applications. Here's the example I'm going to use. Firefox version 10, hypothetically, Firefox version 10 needs Flash. You then upgrade to version 10. You have Flash installed. You then upgrade to version 11. Well, version 11 doesn't need Flash anymore. When you upgrade to 11, it does not remove Flash from your system. Everything is still installed. Everything is still there. By doing these commands, it will go back and it will uninstall all of Flash if no other application needs it. The other command, the auto remove, auto clean, it basically goes in and gets rid of old kernels. Now, this is not a command. You should willy-nilly type away like crazy and just hit yes to everything. This is almost an Arch type mentality of administration and ownership and acknowledgement, only simpler. Okay. And what I mean is, whenever I run the command, I basically look at all the updates. That sounds like an Arch thing, but I look at all the updates, and when prompted, I read them all, because when I look for the ones that say, like, image, header, image, they're new kernels. They don't call them kernels because that would make too much damn sense. They call them image headers. So what I do is I hit yes to have them installed, and then it will immediately ask you, do you want to remove the old kernels? I do not hit yes. I do not hit yes. I then reboot my computer. I then ensure that my computer reboots cleanly. And then I still might not do it. I still might wait a couple of days. But then after you confirmed everything booted cleanly, then you can go back and you can run the same command again. If there are any more updates, it will install them. But then it will ask you, do you want to get rid of the old files, the old kernels? And then you can hit yes. Doing this will ensure any user, just understanding that one rule of running the command, read it, look for these keywords. You know, this isn't rocket science. This is not rocket science. This is something that can easily fit on a post-it note kind of thing. Doing this one thing can extend any new user's Linux installation for years, years and years. And literally, I've had Linux installations for 6+ years because I had to do these kinds of things. But then I learned, why don't I just wrap them all into one command? So that's my one Debian Ubuntu command that I take with me over all ecosystems, whether it be on a Pi device, a Banana Pi device, a Raspberry Pi device, a Odroid device, an Orange Pi device, a Zotac Z-Box, an Intel NUC, a laptop computer, a desktop computer, or a 1U server. That's my command for upgrading and maintenance. You do not want drives to get filled. That's one thing that we used to have way back in the day in Linux. We used to have a mailbox built into the operating system that we used to have alerts go to. I don't see them doing that anymore. So for us to find out our drive is filled, we have to basically approach an unbootable system and then do self-diagnostic ourselves. So doing this will help ensure that at least your drive's not going to get filled with old kernels. You're still going to have to do your due diligence in administration of other things, but at least you don't have to worry about old kernels taking up lots of space. Because I do believe each kernel upgrade, when I did the measurements on my system, it was over 300 megs per kernel. And after a couple of years, that can build up to a lot of file space is what I'll say. I will say, if you want to encourage collaboration of some kind, if you want this to be a more open format, you got to let me know. If you want this to be more of a video format, you got to let me know. If you want this to be more focused on certain niches, you got to let me know. I will not pay attention to the business side. The business side is way too boring. Can't stomach it. Can't put up with it. So anybody who wants to talk about how Kubernetes and Docker and KVMs and VMware Sphere and all this stuff and all this new hardware coming out, I don't want to know about it. I really don't care about it. There's, to me, that's not important stuff. It isn't my job. If my job was Linux in the enterprise environment, I would be fascinated by that and want to talk about it, but I don't. So you can email us at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. You can email me directly at mail@podnuts.com or doordoorgeek@gmail.com. Don't forget that voicemail number, 7076-PODNUT. And I hope to talk to everyone again real soon. And do not forget, if you do not have root, you do not know who does.